Nicole Starrett has been with Dielectric for 9 years and currently holds the position of Director of Electrical Engineering. She received dual bachelor's degrees in electrical engineering and mathematics from the University of Maine. Additionally, she has been a featured technical speaker at a significant number of broadcast events, including NAB and the extremely prestigious Wisconsin Broadcasters Clinic. Nicole's work at Dielectric has been focused on research and development of new antenna technology, creating innovative tools for antenna design, supervising antenna testing for the broadcast repack, and most recently, RF system development. Welcome, Nicole.
Hi, everybody. Thank you all so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here. As Vicki said, a lot of my job at Dielectric is new product development, and this presentation covers a topic that I'm really passionate about, and I hope you guys find it as exciting as I do. So I'll be here to present UHF broadband pylon antenna technology. I love to start my presentations off with a little history lesson, so let's talk about pylon antennas in general. Pylon is a term originally coined by RCA. These are top-mounted slotted coaxial antennas. They're long, thin, round structures, and generally are smaller in size and have less wind load than other types of broadcast antennas. The fantastic thing about these antennas is that they have fewer parts and connections, and if you've heard me speak before, I talk a lot about reliability. With fewer parts and fewer connections, you have fewer failure points. Therefore, your antenna system is much more reliable. As great as these antennas are, there are always disadvantages. And the main one here is the inherently narrow bandwidth of these antennas. In fact, the natural bandwidth of slotted coaxial antennas is about 1% to 2% at VHF. So for most applications, usage is really only considered for a single broadband or a single channel of operation. For today's presentation, I'm going to dig a little bit into how we can broaden that bandwidth and the methods that we've come up with at Dielectric to increase that bandwidth for these antennas, which involve adding external feed lines to the antenna. I'll also talk a little bit about how these external feed lines impact the azimuth pattern of those antennas and how we can mitigate those effects. Let's talk a little bit about phase cancellation itself. In any system, the total reflection coefficient of multiple loads fed in parallel is the summation of the individual loads, each with its own unique phase offset. And that's shown in this lovely equation here. Changing the phase between these loads can provide different levels of impedance cancellation for your entire system. How can we apply that to antennas? Well, this involves what's called a corporate feed network. So phase cancellation is added through these networks. This is a common practice in broadband panel antenna systems where you have many loads or panels fed in parallel, all connected with power dividers and feed lines to create your corporate feed network. That's great for panel antennas, but how can this be applied to slotted coaxial antennas where you can see all of your loads are fed in series? One way that we've been able to do this at Dielectric is by breaking up those pylon antennas into different sections. So you're able to split your pylon up and apply phase cancellation similar to panel antennas to achieve some of the same effect. Each section is fed with a separate feed line from a common power divider to create your single input. For example, this is a 24-layer antenna, which we've split into three center-fed sections. Each section is center-fed either by a harness or a T and fed with an external feed line. This allows for 9 locations at which to apply phase offset to this antenna. And we've been using this method for a long time, and it yields a proven 9.5% bandwidth with a VSWR of 1.1 to 1 or so, which is a huge improvement over the 1 to 2% we see with traditional pylons. The caveat here is that this has been limited to side-mounted antennas thus far. Going to a top-mounted antenna, we've historically used stacks to achieve multi-channel operation of a pylon. And these are single-channel antennas that are structurally stacked together, which, great, you get your multiple stations up there, but they also have their drawbacks, which I'll get to in a minute. Each one of these antennas are fed by a harness, so they're mechanically end-fed, but electrically center-fed. And you can apply a phase offset across that harness to give you your electrical beam tilt of the antenna. Let's talk a little bit about those disadvantages. Well, the obvious one here is that a stacked antenna is twice the height of a single antenna, so you have to have more aperture, it's going to cost more money, and that can be a serious problem. One thing that broadcasters don't always think about is the transmission line that is used to feed the top antenna negatively impacts the circularity of the azimuth pattern of the bottom antenna. So when you add your single feed line, as shown in this slide, you go from a nice omni pattern in both your H-pole and your V-pole to something more of a cardioid, especially for the vertical polarization. There are ways to improve this, and as counterintuitive as it sounds, the best way you can improve your circularity is by adding more transmission lines to your antenna. So you add dummy lines around the antenna. These are strategically placed and sized so that they're big enough to feed the appropriate power to the top antenna, but also spaced off the antenna in an optimized way to improve the circularity best for the bottom antenna itself based on wavelength. So you can see here you go from your one active transmission line with your uglier azimuth pattern to your four, or active transmission line and three dummy lines, which you get a nice omni back for your H-pole, and your V-pole is a heck of a lot better than it was before. So how do we roll both of these applications into a top-mounted pylon antenna for the best broadband capability? This is done by creating what we call a dual harness design to take advantage of phase cancellation by sectionalizing the antenna, as well as adding dummy transmission lines onto the entire antenna to improve the circularity. In this example, we have a 32-layer antenna, which is split into two 16-layer sections. Each of those are center-fed by harnesses. Again, electrically center-fed, mechanically end-fed. These harnesses are fed by a common power divider, which is below your tower top. One harness feeds the bottom section from the bottom, and the other feeds the top section from the top. These top and bottom sections are then structurally attached, similar to a stack, but without all the wedding cake and everything that goes in there. By laying the antenna out like this with this feed system, we're able to achieve six locations at which to apply phase offset, which broadens your operating bandwidth of the antenna. There we go. I have a little bit of math for you guys, but I won't make it too boring, I promise. This is just goes into a little bit of determining the theoretical bandwidth for this type of antenna. We're starting with our dual harness design, so 32 layers split up, two levels of phase cancellation, 6 points of phase offset. We take our wonderful equation up here and appropriate phase runout versus frequency for your desired channel, and we're able to look at the impedance at different points along this antenna. These points, points A, B, and C, start at each section of the antenna and work backwards toward the input, allowing for phase cancellation at each step. If you look at point A, which is at the center of the harness, looking into the top or bottom of your antenna section, you have about a 2% bandwidth with a max VSWR of 1.15 to 1. This makes sense. At that point, you're looking straight into a slotted coaxial antenna. It's just the loads fed in series, so the 2% makes sense. When you look at point B, which is across the harness of this antenna, you're adding in one level of phase cancellation, which improves it some for this particular example. At that point, we see a 2.6% bandwidth for the antenna itself. A little bit of an improvement, not quite there yet. When you add that second level of cancellation, going all the way back to the input at point C, you see the final effects of these multi-points of phase cancellation, which is a 7.2% bandwidth at a max VSWR of 1.15 to 1. This is about five UHF channels. So a lot better than single channel operation. Okay, great, Nicole. We've got our 7.2%, but is that real? Of course not. We know that things aren't perfect in the real world. And the math that we do to provide this theoretical maximum bandwidth makes a lot of assumptions. These assumptions, the biggest one is it assumes that all points, all impedances at point A, the different point A's, are all identical. It also assumes that all of the materials involved are perfect, so it doesn't account for material and manufacturing tolerances that we deal with in the real manufacturing process. For example, a typical steel pipe that we use to make most top-fed antennas, or top-mounted antennas, there can be up to a 12% tolerance on your wall thickness. Now, that's just one variable. There are lots of other tolerances to think about. With that 12% tolerance on the wall thickness, it can create a compounding 1.05 to 1.2 VSWR offset at each layer on that antenna. So you can imagine looking into 4 layers, 8 layers, whatever you have, that the variance is going to significantly change the impedance of each half of the antenna. So you know your impedances at point A can't be the same. This process also assumes that no impedance contribution comes from any power splitting. So your harnesses are perfect, your power divider's perfect, all your components are perfect, you live in this perfect little mathematical world. Which, as engineers, we know that doesn't happen. So from all of this, we know that although the math is great, the actual product bandwidth will be reduced from that theoretical maximum that we calculated. Let's look at the practical application of this design. This is that same 32-layer example that we went over, and this is the one we actually built, the very first broadband pylon designed and manufactured for channels 26 through 29 to service Omaha, Nebraska. Again, it's a 32-layer dual harness design. And when final testing was complete for this antenna, we were able to determine that the measured usable bandwidth was about 5.4% with that same max VSWR of 1.15 to 1. Not too bad. It's about 75% of our theoretical maximum. So we know that's a great rule of thumb moving forward for designing other types of these antennas. All right, we've gone through the dual harness example. And that's great. You know, you use one of your transmission lines, you got your dummy lines on there, fantastic. But if you want to put in more than 4 or 5 channels, you know, what do you do? We've been able to take this process a little bit further and utilize all 4 transmission lines around that antenna. By using the other 3 transmission lines as well as the initial one, we're able to allow more feed points on the antenna itself, which allows for more opportunities to apply phase offset and achieve phase cancellation. More phase cancellation, as you've seen, allows for a broader operating bandwidth of the antenna as a whole. And I love this slide because it kind of looks like a smiley face. Just makes me happy. So let's dig a little bit deeper into this theoretical design. We call this our quad T design. And again, we're going to start with a 32-layer example. This time, instead of splitting it in half, we're splitting into 4 equal sections. Each of these sections is center-fed by a T. And again, the sections are structurally attached to each other, so it's all one antenna in the end. Here we again have 2 levels of phase cancellation, but now we have 12 points at which to apply phase offset for even more phase cancellation, which broadens your operating bandwidth. So you can see here we have a 4-way power divider at the bottom. You have your input T's at each section, and then you have your dummy parasitic lines to continue to fill in those gaps to make sure your circularity stays really great. So again, getting back into the math a little bit, these 2 levels of cancellation, along with your now 12 points of cancellation, the theoretical analysis can be done in the same way to determine your bandwidth at each point in the design. So we're using our lovely equation again, and the appropriate phase runout versus frequency. And if you look at point A, B, and C, again going from each half of your antenna sections all the way back to your input, the bandwidth increases greatly as you go to each of those. At point A, same thing. Our loads are all fed in series. We're looking at a typical pylon. You've got your 2% for that bandwidth. At point B, allowing for more phase offset across the T input T of each of those sections, your bandwidth has now increased to 5.8% for your max VSWR of 1.15 to 1. It's just a huge improvement already. Then we take that one step further, going all the way back to the input of the antenna, adding your second level of phase cancellation. Now we're at 11.8% bandwidth for that max VSWR of 1.15 to 1. Awesome. We know this is theoretical, so if we use our 75% rule of thumb, we're looking at an expected bandwidth of about 8.9%. Awesome. This is equivalent to 8 UHF channels, so that'll get you a lot farther. Now, it looks like I'm going to get us out of here a little bit early, which is fantastic, because I'm sure all of you are getting hungry for lunch. But in conclusion, these are our tried and true high-power top-mounted pylon antennas can be used for broadband multi-channel applications. This is accomplished by applying multi-point phase cancellation and installing external transmission lines around the outside of the antenna, which are used to improve the azimuth pattern circularity and also to feed each section of the antenna. This new technology provides a simple, reliable, low wind load and cost-effective alternative to broadband panel solutions. It's also important to note here that, as I said, we've proven the dual harness design. We have two of those shipped. The first was for channels 26 through 29, and the other was channels 15 to 18, I believe. And those systems are in place, installed, and doing wonderfully. Our quad T design is still in process. We actually have one at the factory right now that I'm really excited to see the results on when I get back to the plant. So we have more to come on that. Thank you all so much for your time. I really appreciate being here, and I will answer any questions you have now. Yes?
You talked about the impact of the transmission lines on the azimuth pattern.
Yes.
How does the antenna behave overall in the elevation plane?
That's a great question. In the elevation plane, the great thing about corporate feed networks and panel antennas is they're very frequency stable. And as we add multiple sections into these antennas, you approach that corporate feed network. So the frequency stability as far as beam tilt and null fill goes across the band is very stable for these antennas, especially as you sectionalize the antenna more and more.
With the additional transmission lines, used or not, what's the additional weight capacity over a traditional antenna?
What's the additional what?
The additional weight load.
You know, I'm not a mechanical engineer, so that is a great question. I could certainly find that out for you. I know the dummy lines themselves, we typically use aluminum, and they're very light, so the weight is minimal at best. And the others, it would be however much a transmission line weighs, depending on the size, you know. Most of these have been done using 4-inch running up the side of the antenna. We've done some in the past with 6 or 7-inch. Obviously, that'll have more weight impact.
Yeah, I was wondering the lead time on building an antenna like that, how much time does it take? And if you have a lightning strike on the tower, the SWR, is that affected at that moment?
Well, lightning strikes are always a part of our lives. These have the same lightning protections that would be on our other broadcast antennas, so I'm sure you would see an impact at that point. As far as I know, the two that we have in the field have not been struck by lightning, so I don't know exactly how that system would react, but I can't imagine it would be any worse than a traditional slotted coaxial antenna. And I'm sorry, what was the first part of your question again? I just got excited about lightning.
The lead time to build one of these antennas.
Oh, the lead time. Yes. I don't have those numbers in front of me. I know for pylon antennas, it's often around 12 weeks. These are a little bit of a special case, so they would probably be more like 18 weeks. Christine could probably answer that better. Well, thank you all.